Now for that informative Issues and Answers show, Greenwich Matters, where your host, Sam Romeo, will keep you up to date on the political scene in Greenwich, along with decisions made at the state and federal levels that impact Greenwich. And of course, he'll take your calls at 661-5051. That's 661-5051. And now, here is your host, Sam Romeo.
From Greenwich to another segment of the Greenwich Matters show. For the first half hour of the show, we're going to be having on Mark Bitz, and we're going to have the chief building official, Robert Root, to answer some of your calls. If you can call him, we'll open up the lines later. And we have some prepared questions for him, too. So I know he's holding on the line, so we'll be right with you, Robert. In the meantime, Mark, I'm going to turn it over to you, and maybe you want to give us a little outline and where we're going to be going with the show tonight.
Sure. Sam, thank you very much. Good evening, everyone. We're going to talk to the award-winning building official tonight, Robert Root. He's going to discuss significant changes in building codes on the show tonight. And I just want to let everyone know a little bit about how we were introduced to Mr. Root and the District 8 and all the building officials. We had the opportunity through our method of presentation that we normally do to architects to present to the District 8 code officials up in Norwalk and Bill Ireland, who's the building inspector over in the town of Norwalk, was nice enough to invite us to do that. And we went and we presented, and Bill and I got to talking, and he started to describe this initiative that they're undertaking to expand the awareness program with regard to these code changes. And Rob Kennedy, who works with me at Greenview, played a very integral part of developing this relationship and bringing us to the show tonight. Rob, why don't you talk a little bit about how you met Bill and how we got involved with all this?
Well, I had been talking to the Norwalk Housing Authority because they were looking to replace their windows, and I went in and met with them, and they looked at our windows, and one of the employees that used to work for the Norwalk Housing Authority now works at the Greenwich Housing Authority, and they are using our windows here. So that's how it all kind of started. And then one of their people sent a great letter saying, talking to all the other different Norwalk municipal people about our windows, and that got out to Bill Ireland. And so Bill Ireland and I met, and we discussed some possibilities for how we could work together. And that's how it all got started.
Well, we have Robert Root on the line. Robert is the Wilton Chief Building Official, and he's going to outline some of the updates that are taking place within the area of the codes. And Robert, are you with us?
Yep, I'm here.
All right. Thanks for coming on the show tonight.
Well, thanks for the offer.
I'm glad that we have this is Sam Romeo. I'm glad we have somebody with your expertise on the show tonight, and I'm sure you've seen a lot of changes throughout your many years of service with the town of Wilton. And a lot of times people aren't up to date with these code changes and stuff, and when they come into the building department, I guess you can give them a real education.
Yeah, well, our organization that started in 2002 is made up of majority of the Fairfield County building officials, a lot of contractors, a lot of architects, a lot of construction companies.
Welcome.
And we do a lot of seminars to update on a lot of different information besides codes. That helps everybody be on the same page because it's a state code. It's not an individual town code.
Right now, do you submit legislation to the state to recommend code changes and regulations?
Well, the state doesn't change the code. The code is developed by organization called ICC,
mm-hmm.
International Code Council, and they have annual meetings, and they just finished one, and all code officials that are members of ICC can present legislation to them or code changes to them and vote on them, both either in person at the conference or via webinars. So that's where the code changes. The state of Connecticut adopts the code and then makes amendments to it to more reflect what the state's looking at. The current amendments right now total about 168 pages, and that's about 8 different code books that are amended besides all the other journals and everything else. So there's a lot of information that has to be taken into account. Besides, the state legislature makes their own statutes and their own rules.
Now, when these code changes go into effect, when the legislature votes on these, most times they ask, well, what's the cost? And actually, there's no cost to the state on it, but the cost is always put back on the developer, the contractor, or the organization. So a lot of times that these proposed changes don't have any effect on the state's budget, but probably has a lot of monetary effect on, say, local housing authorities who have to come into these compliances with codes because they're not grandfathered, especially if they're a fire code.
Fire code and the building code are different.
Yeah, but
building code isn't retroactive. So if a permit were taken out for a structure, say, a year ago, any work that's done will be under the code that was in effect at that time.
Right.
So the code change doesn't come in, you know. And as for cost, the code is a life safety item. So it's more for the safe occupancy of the structure. So I don't know if you can really put a cost on that.
Yeah. Well, the reason I was leading up to it, like fire codes, they are retroactive.
That's correct.
Right. Now, when they do pass a code like that, who notifies the individual or the municipality or the organization that there's been a fire change or a code change and they got to come into compliance?
As for the fire code, I couldn't tell you the path.
Uh-huh.
For the building code, the Office of Education and Data Management and the Office of the State Building Inspector send us out information on when the code's going to change, draft supplements. They have hearings on the amendments that are open to the public and also to building officials, so that this particular code change that came into effect had been under review for probably the last 4 or 5 years. So it wasn't a quick thing. The state legislature has changed their requirements, and they're looking to require, I believe, every 2 years a new code that comes into effect based on what ICC produces. So we're going to see some significant changes coming up again, probably in 2018, 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So, Robert, is it the intent of District 8 to focus on the awareness of these changes, and how would, if so, how would you how do you go about getting this information disseminated to the public?
Well, one of our common ways is we have a website. It's called district8ct.com, and it has a listing of all the events that we present and the subjects for the seminars. An ability for contractors and tradespeople and other people interested in the code to contact us and arrange for attendance to our seminars, which we do about 10 a year. So most building officials are required to have 90 hours of training over a period of 3 years. So our organization provides close to 20 hours of credits for them, which is very helpful. And then, of course, each department sends out press releases. We have a lot of information packages in all our offices that explain that the significant changes in the building code and also how to comply with it and the best way to do it. And that's, it's all a matter of communication and information that's sending out. This program should help in that sense. A lot of people are afraid of walking into the building department, and they're afraid of the building inspector. And we kind of don't want to be treated that way. We're not awful people. We would consider ourselves first preventers versus police and fire or first responders. So we're trying to make it safe for the people who live in their houses.
Absolutely. So the format is that you're referring to, it's sort of like a CEU, like a continuing education format that's required, these 90 hours that you're talking about?
Right. That's our requirement to keep our license for the state. But we also, a lot of the programs that we offer have a lot of give and take with the presenters and with the other building officials, and it's very helpful for tradespeople and building and construction and architects to be there to everybody get on the same page, understanding what exactly those five words in that paragraph mean. Because it's sometimes it's very confusing and sometimes it's very technical. And there's a lot of exceptions that come into play. So we all spend hours in our books just researching things so that we're going to do our due diligence and make sure everything's correct interpretation and our enforcement of the regulations.
And does the educational process go beyond those that are looking to, get these continuing education credits and keep up to date? I mean, does it expand out into the general populace or is that not a factor?
No, that's generally not, because the subject matter, unless you have the book and have a lot of practice going through the book, it's probably not going to help you. It's better, and we always encourage people to call us and ask questions, because we're more than willing to help anybody with their project and make sure that it goes smoothly and it doesn't cost them a lot of extra money, because there's a lot of ways to meet the code. There's not just one way.
Well, I ask because I run across this from time to time with our business. Now we're a distributor of products, so we don't get involved to a great extent in the installation process of materials, whether it be windows or any other type of material. It's sort of a secondary area for us. We're sort of one step removed, but we do get questions from homeowners. For example, I had a question recently with regard to egress. Talking about what that means and why it's important, and they had a concern which is not an egress issue. They also had a concern about child safety, falling out of a second floor bedroom window. How do you what do you do? What are the codes related to opening a window and the ability of a child to fall out? I assume you get involved with all that.
Well, yeah, that's part of our, there are codes for the size of windows, how to meet the egress requirements, the safety for basically what the code says on the restraint, fall restraint through a window is if the window opening is less than 24 inches above the floor, finished floor, and the distance from the outside to the ground is greater than 72 inches, the window has to have a limit on it to open only 4 inches. It can be reset and open fully to meet egress requirements, but it's an automatic stop that allows it only to open 4 inches. That's one method. There's also fixed screens that go in that are fall protection, and there's also a series of, I hate to say to use word bars, but that's one of the methods to prevent children from falling out. But again, it's very specific to how far above the ground it is and how far above the finished floor it is. And we look at that when we do our plan review. And we also mention that when we go out and do our rough inspections, make sure everybody is aware of the fact that that window may or may not need restraint on it.
So the way the whole process works then is that you make the code and your builder or your installer comes and puts your windows in, and then your inspector goes out and makes sure everything was done up to code. That's
right. But we also, when we do our plan review, we make notations, and there's a set of drawings that go back to the job site that have any significant issues or code issues that are on them that we noted on the drawings.
Oh, I see. So it also it's done on the front end, so that before the windows are even put in, you're looking at the drawings and the plans,
right,
and the specifications, and you're determining it whether it's going to be up to code from that.
Right. It's not something that we try to use as a surprise. Surprises are not good on either side of the table. We try to make it as fair and equitable as possible and give out as much information as possible. And we're always available to answer questions. We never don't answer a question. If we don't have the answer, we have a number of resources to get the answers.
Oh, is there a call-in number or something like that somebody could, if they had a question about a code or something like that?
Generally, the best point of contact is called the local building official, the local building department.
Okay.
And, you know, that's because they're the ones that are going to, you know, if you're doing something in a particular town, that's the best person to contact. The state is a source, but, again, they're very, very limited in their staff and their ability. I mean, there's times when I can't even get through to the state.
Well, I was going to ask, practically speaking, would you recommend physically going down to your local building inspector, or is it going to be possible for people to call in, you know?
Depending on what information they have, mm-hmm. We may be able to make a determination over the phone.
Okay.
A lot of times, though, it's best to bring in a sketch or, you know, all of us have emails, and we respond to our emails, and you can send us information that way to look at a drawing or some kind of information, a specification on a product. We do that on a daily basis.
Okay. Why don't you talk a little bit more about some of the things that District 8 is doing, related to these code changes in terms of getting the awareness out? I know that you have a scholarship initiative as well that you've put in place for, I believe, Norwalk Community College?
That's correct. We have a good relationship with the Architectural Department and Engineering Department at Norwalk Community College. And every year we give out scholarships to deserving students, usually three scholarships. I'm not sure of the monetary values. And they also do a competition where they come to our end of year dinner, and they have three of them have models that we vote on, which is the best one for another cash award. So that they're, and a lot of them have to give us a code demonstration of how it meets the code and a description. So the whole class does it, and then we pick the three best.
And where does the funding come from to provide the scholarship?
Is we sponsor a golf tournament at Whitney Farms in Monroe, and usually it's the last week in September.
Okay.
Generally, we cap our participation at 160 golfers, which is 44, some a lot of people. And we have anywhere from 12 to 18 people that are working the tournament during the tournament. And we have about a 10-member committee that organizes and gets everything together, and that we meet probably, I would say, once a month throughout the winter, and then probably every 2 weeks prior to the tournament, just to get everything set up and organized. And we have to usually turn people away because we fill up very, very quickly. And that's the funds that we use for our donations to charities and to the scholarships, both to NCC and to children and grandchildren of the members of the association.
And do you have other types of events like the golf event, or is that the only event you have?
The only golf event that we do at this point. It works very well. The chairman is Paul Zeiss for the golf committee. And Billy Ireland has been doing it for a number of years, both for the Norwalk Bears football team and also for us. So he's probably the lead on that. He knows and has to do that well. But we have, we've had 13 years, and we probably, I would say, half the participants have been there every year.
So you don't have to have any worry about getting the word out for your tournament. That's
they're,
for sure.
They're already asking Bill, when are you going to send the paperwork out so we can sign up?
Well, Bill asked me late to play, and besides the fact that I'm horrible, I would have loved to, except it was just a little bit late for my schedule this year when I became aware of it. But for any of those listeners out there that that have an interest in participating in this golf tournament, how would they go about signing up for it?
Go right to our website, district8ct.com, and all the information is there.
They also could make a direct cash donation, right, to the scholarship fund if you want?
I wouldn't be aware of. Yeah. Bill handles all the financial and monetary end of that, so I'm not going to make an answer one way or the other.
I know nobody likes to turn down cash, but I'm willing to bet that there's a way to get it in there. They'll take it.
Well, Rob, thank you so much. If you have anything else to add, you're more than welcome. But we really appreciate you being on the show and representing the initiative for District 8 tonight.
Oh, thank you very much for the opportunity, and it was very pleasurable. It was a lot better than I anticipated.
I was just going to say that, and look how fast the time went. And, you know, you would think, what am I going to say? What do I know? We carried almost the whole half hour here, and you did a yeoman's job here with information.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Rob, and I just want to say a quick thanks to Bill Ireland and Steve Smith and all the people that helped make this happen tonight. They've been wonderful to us. They treat us very, very well, and we really appreciate it.
Okay, thanks. Good night.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
So, Rob, you want to put a few words in and end the show and give a little thoughts out there for the evening?
Well, if anybody wants to learn more about some of what we're doing, you can go to greenviewbuildingproducts.com. And we are involved in a lot of different housing projects in the area, and we're a big believer in sustainability.
Yeah, and I just wanted to add that, you know, we do have some interesting shows planned for the coming weeks. We have recently partnered with a company called Eco Supply. They are a wonderful producer of green building materials, and we hope to get them on the show very soon. If you're interested in seeing some of their, they have absolutely exquisite building materials, very high end, and green products. Their website is ecosupplycenter.com. And, you know, we hope to have a number of other advocates for sustainability on the show in the weeks to come.
Okay, well, it looks like we ran the clock out here in this half hour. See how fast it goes, the time?
It goes pretty fast,
right.
Sam.
So,
as always.
From 2 weeks from tonight, you'll be back, and we'll have another interesting show on green products and upcoming events. So until next week, or 2 weeks, you've been listening to Sam Romeo with Greenview Products on WGCH 1490.